Big show for you here today. Week 8 Sunday recap. We talk Sunday Night Football. Well, I talk Sunday Night Football at you guys to start the show. 49ers, Cowboys. Interesting takeaways from a game that felt bizarre at times. Then we get into the rest of the show with Andy Behrens, who's fresh off of a brutal Bears loss. But what do we think about Jaden Daniels coming out of this performance? The Browns passing offense, is it alive with Jameis Winston under center? And what do we make of a Bengals offense that's just not been as good as expected? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, October 28th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. Week 8 Sunday is in the books. It seems like we are so far into the NFL season and yet have so much farther to go. And I feel good about that after what was an absolutely electric Sunday of football. You all know how it works here on the Sunday recap shows. I start with a solo recap of the Sunday Night Football game before an extremely pained Andy Behrens joins me later on to dive into the rest of the Sunday slate. Before we get to Andy, before we get to his misery, let's start it off with the game that we just watched on Sunday night. 49ers 30, Cowboys 24. We're going to recap this one as we always do, care, don't care style. The thing we care about is the 49ers bag is deep. Let me just say, I'm not ready to be all rosy and optimistic about the 49ers for the rest of the season. I am not here to say that all is well in San Francisco land, that this team is going to be great just because they beat up on the Dallas Cowboys defense. You know, it wasn't even a perfect outing by that offense. What I am here to say is that no team, no operation this year has better embodied the next man up mentality. And on Sunday Night Football, as they had to dig deeper and deeper into their bag for playmakers, they consistently found answers with Deebo Samuel once again in and out of the game. Oh, man, Deebo should have had a much bigger game in this one. Seemed like he was allergic to the end zone at times. He had a touchdown called back due to penalty. As somebody that needed that Deebo Samuel touchdown, that was painful. And speaking of painful, he's just been dealing with stuff all year long. He picked up a rib injury in addition to everything else that he was dealing with coming into this game. You know, Brandon Ayuk is still on IR, obviously. Christian McCaffrey, he's at least a couple weeks away from returning. George Kittle was the lone superstar 49er skill position player available, and he made his presence felt all night long. Kittle led the 49ers in routes. He was targeted on 28% of those routes. He was just dusting Cowboys middle of the field defenders, linebackers. They're going to have nightmares of George Kittle, not just getting open on them at will, but also running after the catch. He averaged 12 yards after the catch per reception on Sunday Night Football. Kittle was amazing, but, you know, as embarrassing as it is that he was the main man that Dallas had to deal with, and they had no answers for Kittle. It wasn't just Kittle who contributed to moving the ball. Obviously, Purdy, more timely scrambles, of course, but there are some ancillary players that stepped up here, and that was without, obviously, Juwan Jennings, who's out with that hip injury. First-round wideout Ricky Pearsall, he's not going to, you know, pop in terms of fantasy football here, but he did catch all four of his targets. He also had a key 39-yard scamper as a rusher to kind of close out the games in the final minutes. Chris Conley ended up leading the team in routes, but he predictably was just kind of the sacrificial X receiver. Ricky Pearsall was number three, tied with Deebo Samuel, in terms of routes at the wide receiver position. And yeah, Pearsall had some moments here. We got to give Pearsall some grace. He is coming back from a serious incident in August, but he showed you that, okay, he can play a little bit. He can be part of this offense. And then it was Isaac Garendo here as the rookie running back. He touched the ball 14 times for 80 yards. With Jordan Mason kind of dealing with that shoulder injury, he was out of the game. He looked like a guy that could start for this team and they would be solid. Again, caveat applied here that this is the Dallas Cowboys defense that's no good. But still, picks like Ricky Pearsall and Isaac Garendo seem like luxuries when they come down the wire during NFL draft weekend. Because, oh, the 49ers, they got great players in those positions. Why are those guys needed? you know, beyond obviously contract squeezes and things like that. This is not the first time a Kyle Shanahan 49ers team has experienced waves of injuries. They know what this is like. They know what can happen when you start to get that avalanche. And again, I'm not saying this team is completely saved or they're not going to reach the heights that we wanted for them. But the reality is having quality skill position players, the depth at those spots is necessary when you're a team like the Niners that's built around your elite offense. Like, why just completely have your season go in the tank when you lose your superstars? You can lose superstars and put some developing, kind of growing pieces that you've been grooming, younger guys with talent, some rookies here like Pearson Guerrero. Even Mason before this was a guy they've been grooming for years. Why just completely let your season go to waste when you have injuries there? It shouldn't be the excuse. You should have depth that you can turn to. The Niners do have that depth. That's what I care about. Now, the thing I don't care about, kind of juxtaposing everything that I just said about the damn Niners, I don't care about the brand name players on the Cowboys. I don't even really care that CeeDee Lamb had this massive game here tonight from a box score perspective. Yeah, if you had CeeDee Lamb on your fantasy team, the fact that he comes away from this game with 146 yards and two touchdowns, 16 targets, it didn't seem like that was going to happen for most of this game. Had a couple blown coverages, missed assignments for the two touchdowns, seemed like it to me on the Niners defense. The reality of the Cowboys is they just do not have enough good players, period. That's the story. And you know what? That was obvious. All offseason, that was obvious. It was obvious that they were hilariously overmatched in the running back room. They were undermanned at the complimentary pass catcher spots. It also did not help that they were engaged in what proved to be a needless contract dispute with their lone superstar player, CeeDee Lamb. It didn't. That was not really the case tonight, but there's been at times where you're looking at CeeDee Lamb and is he a little rusty? Is he a little shaky kind of coming into the season because he didn't do anything during training camp, just like the conversations we had about Brandon Ayuk? Like, that's a problem a team like Dallas that has no margin for error absolutely cannot afford. You also can't afford to have your quarterback throw two interceptions, Dak threw another two interceptions in this game. 10 minutes, 50 seconds left in the fourth quarter. The Cowboys were sitting on 3.8 yards per play. That is pathetic. I was nicer about it when I wrote it in my column, but this is a podcast. Who cares? We can just say stuff. That was pathetic, especially against the 49ers defense that, you know, they have Bosa, they have Fred Warner, but they don't have a lot else. This has been a problematic defense all year long. So the fact that the Cowboys just couldn't muster anything to start this game, it's rough. It's rough. When you have one guy that other teams need to care about, and that is what the 49ers, excuse me, that's what the Cowboys have. They have one guy. They have CeeDee Lamb. That's it. It can neuter your offense really fast unless that player takes over the game, which is what we saw here with Dallas. If you thought at all that the running back rotation was going to be interesting with this 2017 backfield, now, oh, Dalvin Cook, been tearing it up in practice, I've heard. He's activated for his first game. Doesn't matter. 6 carries, 12 yards. Congratulations. Guys like Kevontae Turpin cannot be seeing the field for you. You know, Jake Ferguson. I like Jake Ferguson. He can't be like your second best receiver. It says everything that was on paper that pointed to this Cowboys team being too top heavy. It's been true. I don't know. I mean, again, this is a team that's dealt with injuries. Ferguson's been banged up. Brandon Cooks has not been available. Brandon Cooks wasn't playing well when he was available. So all in all, this is the Cowboys team, the worst version of the Cowboys team that you possibly could have expected. And more, this is just exactly who they, like, this is who they are. This is the team that Jerry Jones has built. This is the team that, you know, Mike McCarthy has to manage through. And I don't think Mike McCarthy is doing anything to help this. It's all bad in Dallas. It's all bad in Dallas. Like, Jalen Tolbert, fine player, cannot be your number two receiver. This is just, it's too much. They've got guys playing way above their head. And it's a stark contrast to what the San Francisco 49ers have on the other side. So with that, I think we can close the book on Sunday Night Football. Pretty easy team to understand there in Dallas. And some interesting guys there on the 49ers side. So that's going to do it for Sunday Night Football. With that, let's toss to the rest of the show with Andy Behrens. We break down the games that you should care about, the games we sort of care about, and the games that could have been an email. Let's get into it. Joining me now, as he always does here on this portion of the Sunday recap, is my very good friend whose well-being I care about, Andy Behrens. Andy, when I dreamed up the possible scenarios in which, like, what your mental state would be, because we talked about this on the preview show, like, what state would you be in when you joined the Sunday Recap? I don't think in a thousand, you know, universes or whatever it is, like with Doctor Strange and the Avengers, like, this is the one. I did not. This is the one. I don't think I could have dreamed this up. So, buddy, thanks for being here.
Yeah, that was wild for a lot of different reasons. I've been on a personal roller coaster, a bit of a journey for the last 3.5 hours or so. So I am a bit of an emotionally spent force right now after that Bears Commanders game. But it wasn't, honestly, it's not the worst version of that game that could have possibly taken place. As I was telling producer Colin before we jumped on, if that thing had just simply ended after 3 quarters and I never got a taste of like Caleb Williams doing anything positive all day and the Bears putting together anything like a normal drive, I would have really been a wreck, actually. If they'd just lost a normal game as it was going and gotten completely shut down, I actually would have felt far worse than I do right now.
Well, I mean, you are kind of, for the YouTube folks, they can see you're kind of shrouded in darkness here. You're wearing a black hoodie, potentially looks like a black hurt.
I'm in a dark place.
Under the hoodie. You don't really have that much lighting. So, you know, yeah, you're this is the state that Andy Behrens finds himself in. But all right, let's get into the show. We are going to lead with the Bears game, a Bears Commanders game. But reminder for the new folks here, for whatever reason you wanted to tune in to hear Andy's pain because you're just a Behrens hater. Reminder for those people out there, we break the games into 3 categories here on the Sunday Recap Show. The games we care about the most, the games we sort of care about, and then the games that could have been an email. And then we are going to end this. We don't always do it. We don't always end the show with some awards, but I definitely have at least one award. Maybe Andy does to give out this week, too. But let's start with the game that we do care about, and it is Commanders 18, Bears 15. Andy Behrens, I'm just going to throw this one to you. Obviously, we know how this game ended, and we can get into that, just absolutely outrageous ending on the Hail Mary to Noah Brown. But beyond the way it ended, just the floor is yours to take this game anywhere you want to go.
Once we, once Bears fans actually like cycle through all the emotions that follow a game like that, obviously that's going to go down as a really memorable game. It was not for 3 quarters, a particularly, it wasn't a good game within the context of the Bears season. But for 3 quarters, it was a disaster game, right? And this is what I mean when I was mentioning at the top that, like, I really would have felt bad if that whole thing just would have shut down after 3 quarters, because if the Bears did anything positive, there was a pre-snap penalty involved and it got negated. One of the things that I have been, I feel like I've mentioned it a few times so far this season that I've been happy about with Caleb is that he doesn't repeat a lot of mistakes. But in this game, for 3 quarters, we just saw a lot of what had gone wrong early in the season in the first 2 weeks, right? We saw quarterback clearly not on the same page with receivers. Again, a lot of the pre-snap penalties, the line play was very poor, suffered a couple injuries on the line too. So we'll see what that looks like in weeks ahead. And it was just, I mean, that was like the worst version of the Bears for 3 quarters. And then we actually got a couple of positive drives and Caleb had a normal passing total in the 4th quarter and probably made 2 of the best throws of his entire season in the final couple drives, right? Yeah. The ball to DJ Moore, where DJ Moore actually got dinged on the play, that route where Caleb only had one place that he could possibly put it, and he knew he was going to get hit as he released it. That was a great ball. And then he dropped down sidearm to make a throw that brought the ball to like the 1-yard line to Carter. That was great too. So there were some really nice moments. All of it in spite of the play calling, like some truly disastrous play calling from Shane Waldron, who honestly, like, it feels weird to say that, maybe this is just me being like too emotional after a tough loss, but man, it feels like that job could be at risk. I mean, the handing off to a rando lineman on the 1-yard line when DeAndre Swift is feasting You got Roschon Johnson on the team. Like, he's a big dude that you can hand it to on the goal line. And then the player in question just had no, like, didn't even look like he'd ever taken a handoff before. Didn't seem ready for the play. So that was a disaster. Late in the game, where we call back-to-back quarterback draws, apparently, for Caleb Williams, which, you know, a disaster sequence that kind of gets, you know, people are going to forget about it because Keenan Allen drew a PI flag, and so they get the ball at the 1 yard line. But I don't know, the whole sequence was really ugly, and Caleb was still making things happen in spite of the play calling. So felt okay with Caleb's performance at the end of it, not the disaster that it might have been. Obviously, the game ended. I don't know. If I'm going to try to be objective, that's a pretty fun ending for this game. And I think that this is going to be a rivalry that we see again and again for the next like three years, 5 years, 7 years. I don't know. This feels like these are two ascending teams that are going to face each other a time or two in meaningful games. So fun ending. I can separate myself from it enough. I would say if I were a Washington fan, obviously you're elated if you're a Washington fan. Jaden Daniels played better than his receivers. Like hero ball game from Jaden Daniels, who is obviously still dealing with a rib injury that is probably compromising his ability to, I mean, he threw that Hail Mary like 60 yards in the air. He's got a rib injury right now. Like, that's crazy. And they had a really nice sequence leading up to the Hail Mary too. Like, they, you know, the play call immediately before it, just a short out to get him in range to even be able to reach the end zone was very well played. So like they did their part, and the Bears certainly did their part. But man, Daniels was better than his receivers. He had I don't know how many balls are going to get classified as drops, but there are a bunch of missed opportunities for Washington receivers. You feel really good when the ball is coming to Terry McLaurin. They had a great deep ball connection today. They had, you know, they connected a bunch of times. That was great. Everything else feels like kind of a dice roll. You know, the dice came up on the right side for Washington on the Noah Brown touchdown. But man, if they add a receiver at the deadline, I mean, that it's just a glaring need for that team, right? Because that game didn't need to be close. They also had a couple of touchdowns negated by, you know, big plays negated by like illegal men downfield. They had a touchdown taken off the board. So like that game didn't have to be close. It never felt like the Bears should have won it, and the Bears were maybe going to steal a win. So there's probably a little justice served at the end of that thing. Phenomenally impressed by Jaden Daniels. That was a hell of a game. And it's not like his stats are going to be fine. His stats could have been sensational in this one.
Yeah, 326 passing yards. Obviously, the 52-yard Hail Mary is doing a lot of heavy lifting there. That was his lone passing touchdown of the day. He still ran for 52 yards on 8 carries. Like, he said to the broadcast, the CBS broadcast, like, I'm not going to, you know, hold back, basically. I'm not going to like change my style of play just because of this injury. And he kept his word. He still took off running. He still took shots downfield.
He did a really good job. Like, I don't know how many times he ran for first downs where he got like 1 foot farther than he needed to get for the first down and stepped out of bounds. Like, that's we should see more of that. He should do more of that.
Absolutely. And in a league where there's multiple, you know, mobile quarterbacks, you can't just like just get out of bounds. Just don't take the extra contact. Just don't take the extra punishment. I mean, the entire Dolphins stadium, you know, blew up in applause when Tua slid today.
Yeah.
I don't mean to make light of his, you know, concussion and injury history and things like that. But like, that's the sort of stuff that we're talking about here. Jaden Daniels already plays like a veteran. I also have to say, I know this is not how his actual emotional state, but I watched pull back the curtain here. Andy needed a little bit of time to compose himself to get on the pod. So
I need a minute.
I watched the post game interview with Jaden Daniels and the CBS crew there, and he almost just seemed bored. You know, he seemed bored in the post. I'm sure you didn't watch it, Andy. He seemed like bored in this post game interview with Tracy Wolfson. Like, and I know that's not the emotion that he's feeling, but he was just completely unfazed by his own greatness. And meanwhile, you know, my phone is going nuts with a bunch of people texting me. I'm sure Andy's was way worse. You know, the internet's going crazy, and Jaden Daniels just kind of has just holding on to his pads and just kind of like just has like a light smile on his face, and you know, he's just completely cool in the moment. So yeah, I mean, I think it's wheels up for Jaden Daniels. Obviously they're 6-2. You mentioned like training for a receiver at the deadline. Deontay Johnson certainly would look nice. Like, can I interest you in that?
Nice. Yeah.
You know, because these ancillary receivers, again, Noah Brown, 3 for 73 and a touchdown. Obviously, the 52-yard batted Hail Mary has a lot to do with that. They do not have like any other impact players. I mean, Zach Ertz is their second most effective pass catcher on this team, and it's 2024. So, I you know, as Romo's calling this game, I had to think like, there's definitely got to be some games where Zach Ertz and Tony Romo overlapped in the NFC East, right? I mean, Zach Ertz has been in the league for a minute here. So, yeah, like a Deontay Johnson would look nice. I even just thought about, like, next offseason when we have, you know, T. Higgins maybe on the move. That this is, if you're a Commanders fan, if you're invested in Jaden Daniels at all, this is the sort of actual fantasies you can start to play out in your head, is like, who is going to come play with this rocket ship ascending quarterback who's just coming off such a dramatic win here, and like you said, really gutted out a performance all game long that was not indicative of his current health status. So fantasy wise nothing really to report on Washington. I mean, it kind of played out as we expected. On the Bears side, yeah, man, I feel like an idiot for praising Shane Waldron coming out of the bye for cutting out a lot of the fat of this offense. And then we literally have a big man, offensive line fullback, offensive lineman fullback play at the goal line. I mean, honestly, I was elated for you when they get the touchdown with Roschon Johnson. Like, all right, Caleb leads a big boy drive. Shane Waldron just does the adult thing and hands off to your great goal line back. And then obviously the Hail Mary happens, but really discouraging, I think, post-bye performance from the Chicago Bears. But Andy, watching this game, like, how much of this was the Bears offense versus and just kind of the erraticism, if that's a word, in the passing game, and how much of it is, I do think this Commanders defense is starting to tighten things up a little bit too.
Yeah, honestly, I want to, you know, I want to give a little bit of credit to the Commanders defense, because that pass rush got them. There were a couple of occasions where it seemed like Caleb had room to run and somebody would clip his heel from behind. Yeah. Like, I don't know, the Commanders are good. Like, that was a defense that was playing better than its year to date numbers. Helped a little bit that the Bears again took some hits on the offensive line. The offensive line didn't look great. If you're just seeing the world through like a Bears fan's prism, as some of us are, really disappointing way to come out of the bye if you're Chicago. Really, really disappointing to revert to some early season mistakes if you're Chicago. So that wasn't great. But also, like, the Commanders forced a lot of that, and seemed like a pretty great crowd too, because there was there were many occasions when Caleb had a very difficult time being heard.
Yeah, and I still think overall most of what I felt about this team coming out of the bye week from like a fantasy perspective remains true. I think DeAndre Swift is a must start running back, and I just unfortunately feel like, because the ceiling of the offense is never going to be that high, because it is still a rookie quarterback and it is Shane Waldron, and there's just, it's a little too crowded in the receiver room with Cole Kmet included to ever truly have one of these guys be like a clear cut fantasy starter as well, which is a little disappointing. I thought maybe we'd get, I didn't really think we'd get anything changing there coming out of the bye, just because like, you're not zeroing out DJ Moore. You're not zeroing out Keenan Allen or for Rome Odunze to have like a true post bye rookie bump or anything like that. So I feel like it's a little status quo there in Chicago.
Swift was great. You know, it's like difficult in this moment to focus on things that the Bears did well or that went right for the Bears, but Swift was awesome. The touchdown run was phenomenal. He had anytime an NFL skill player has a hurdle that just absolutely works and they're able to actually continue a run after jumping over another human being, I think it's the most amazing thing of the week. And Swift had one of those. I mean, Swift has been great. Like, from the moment that we were all kind of wondering, why did the Bears even do this? And is DeAndre Swift even their lead runner anymore? He's been so emphatically the best running back on that team and a driving force of the offense. He's been awesome.
You ready to move on? You ready to put this game in our rearview mirror here?
I don't know that I'll ever exactly put this game in the rearview mirror, but I'm ready to pretend that I'm moving on. Sure.
Well, let's move on to a feel-good story here, I guess, depending on your perspective about this particular organization. But Browns 29, Ravens 24 here for our next game. This one was – originally I planned before this Bears nightmare in Andy's perspective. I originally intended to open up the show with Andy joining here saying, like, this 1 p.m. slate was – I mean, absolutely electric. The finish for most of these games was just insane, including in this game where the Ravens end up getting upset by the Cleveland Browns. Jameis Winston takes over for the Browns, Andy, and suddenly everybody in this passing game has a little bit of life.
Yeah, we had a 5 or 7 minute stretch there where every game was in like a, you know, potential game winning drive. Wild plays were happening, some of which were getting called back. But man, like that little window there, that little witching hour at the very end of the early games was crazy. I mean, I think the headliner fantasy wise for this week is probably what we got from the Browns offense and Jameis Winston. Winston with over 300 yards, 3 touchdowns. It wasn't as clean a game as the box score will look like, right? Like there were, sure. You know, there's a dropped interception in this one. There were some balls that I don't even know where Jameis was going with them, but that's part of the experience. If you're new to fantasy football and you're just getting your first taste of the Jameis Winston experience, it's not always this good, buckle but up. It's always this fun. yeah, buckle up. It was taking Deshaun Watson like 3 games to put together the stat line that Jameis did today against Baltimore. And obviously Baltimore had a banged up secondary today. There were some issues there, but huge day from Cedric Tillman who really, you know, it was a nice sort of consolidation game for him, a great way to back up the big performance 1 week prior where he saw 12 targets, finishes with 99 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns, including the game winner. He looked great. And this is like, that's his role now. He was a guy who was only seeing about a third of the snaps early in the season until the Amari Cooper trade. And now he's just going to be on the field all the time. And he's going to see 8 to 12 targets a week. And he's a pretty explosive player. He's got size. He's, you know, he fits exactly what they, you know, he fits exactly the hole that they had in the offense. So he's pretty clearly the guy who gains the most in terms of where he was 2 weeks ago versus where he is now in terms of fantasy value. But good day for Elijah Moore, 12 targets for him. Like Jameis is clearly somebody who can support multiple startable receivers in any given week. You know, and Njoku comes through for us. Jerry Jeudy even makes some noise. Again, Tillman, the big day. So they have a bunch of really tough matchups coming up. Mm-hmm. Like they still have Pittsburgh coming up twice. It's just nothing but difficult defense. I think they have the Chargers next week, right? So it's not, they don't have any easy opponents for the next like month and a half, and they've got a bye in there too. But man, Jameis is going to chuck the ball downfield and they have some playmakers. So that's a pretty frisky offense.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're not going to go to the moon or anything like that with some of these matchups, but at least we can talk about these guys now, right? We don't need to, you know, relitigate Deshaun Watson and all that stuff, but it's 9.7 air yards per completion for Jameis Winston today, according to Next Gen Stats. Like, that is the Jameis Winston experience. He's going to push the ball downfield. And, like, these guys are good players, man. That's what's been crazy about this is, like, Elijah Moore is good. I've seen it with my eyes. I know he can get open. Jerry Jeudy's Jerry Jeudy. He's been an overrated player at certain points in his NFL career, but he's not like dust. Okay. And Cedric Tillman, man, Cedric Tillman is just, you could tell that this team was trying to get him on the field. Even during the offseason, they talked about, well, maybe we'll play him over Elijah Moore, one of these guys or something like that. And then it's kind of clear, like he primarily should be playing X receiver, which is Amari Cooper's role. But it's clear that this team believed in him and liked what they saw. And you see it out here. I feel so good about my Cortland Sutton comparison. People seem to hate this Cortland Sutton comparison. Maybe I need to say pre-ACL Cortland Sutton to make everybody feel better about it, but I think people are just a little too harsh on Cortland Sutton. I get it, you know, but like he's fine. But like maybe again pre ACL tear Cortland Sutton, that's what Cedric Tillman can be. Really, he's again another good player. David Njoku can play. Like this Browns offense has legitimately good quality receivers, and now we get a functional NFL quarterback back there. It's not going to be perfect. Jameis took some sacks he probably shouldn't have taken. You mentioned some of the ill-advised throws. That's all going to be part of the experience, but at least we can talk about some of these players now at this point. On the Ravens side, you know, this was definitely probably the most volatile performance for the Ravens offense here, Andy, but you know, of course, like Rashad Bateman follows up his big game with a couple of ugly looking drops. I think he lost one in the sun, yeah, but still looked pretty bad. We just didn't get a lot of consistency from a pass game perspective from this Ravens team, although Lamar still ends with a decent passing day, 23 of 38 for 289 yards and two scores.
Yeah, it's a like the guys that you really needed fantasy wise in this one still came through. It's a good day for Lamar. Got a little bit on the ground, a couple of touchdowns. You mentioned the one that Bateman lost in the sun was just such a killer because it was a, you know, fun extended play situation for Lamar. I mean, he hit the receiver either in the face or in the numbers. I'm not sure. But
I think it was in the face. Yeah. And it was very similar to, it was like so similar to the one that they connected on Monday night, not the big touchdown play, but Bateman's first big catch, where part of the, I think the criticism of this connection has been that when Lamar goes off script, Bateman hasn't always been great to improvise with him, but he had that big play on against the Bucs doing it last week. And then in this one, like, yeah, Bateman gets into the right position, but then clanks off his face and immediately he's like pointing up to the sun, which, you know, the sun has been part of the earth experience for quite some time.
Yeah, probably not your first time having to deal with a large bright object in the sky. But like Mark Andrews finds the end zone again. I thought really encouraging game from Zay Flowers, who actually, you know, I've got a league where it worked out because I benched him for Cedric Tillman. But I was pretty panicky about the health of Zay Flowers, and he was obviously much healthier than I'd expected him to be. Catches seven balls, goes over 100 yards. So we're back to normal expectations for him. It's just a another one of these games this year where the Baltimore offense scores enough to win the thing. And the, you know, the defense gives up 29 in this case, but you know, the defense, it just has not been a shutdown defense all season. And I don't know that we can necessarily expect that.
All right, let's move on to the final game that we're going to do here in the care section. Cardinals 28, Dolphins 27. Andy Behrens, we got, you know, a pretty nice performance. I would say this is Kyler Murray's best passing performance of the season, and he was having fun with a few people on Twitter about you know, calling him out for his pre-post Call of Duty stats and things like that. So it's good to see Kyler, who's not shy about chirping back on the internet. It was good to see him kind of push back on that narrative. But like I said, 300 yards passing, two touchdowns. Next Gen Stats noted that on passes of 10 air yards against the Dolphins, he was 10 of 13 for 192 yards and two touchdowns. He was also really good on these kind of like game or passes that took over 2.5 seconds plus 10.4 completion rate over expected. And dude, Andy Behrens, Trey McBride had a game here, but I think the highlight has to be, and I know this sounds so stupid and dorky, but Marvin Harrison Jr. actually got some in-breaking targets, like deep downfield in-breaking targets, which if you've listened to this show at all, you've listened to any of my content, you know, I've been complaining about the route portfolio for Marvin Harrison. These are the type of plays we saw against Miami that I've been kind of begging to see all year long.
Yeah, and it has not been there. It's stuff that Kyler Murray has not consistently hit in the last couple of years. He threw a ball today that was just like a, you know, F it, Marvin's out there somewhere kind of throw. So it's great to see them connecting on those as well. This is a great day for Harrison because there was a moment early in the game where there was a little bit of conversation, I thought, between Kyler and Harrison, a little bit of misconnection stuff, and you were kind of eye rolling and you were like, oh man, I hope this isn't just another quiet 3 for 35 day for Marv. But then he was great, and McBride was obviously great in this one. It's kind of the inverse of what we've been seeing from Arizona all season too, right? Because they, you know, their modus operandi to this point has been the first drive looks great, half of the second drive looks great, and then maybe you'll get another touchdown out of us somewhere along the way. But this one was, I mean, this was all late. This was all second half stuff. They were tremendous late in this game, and Miami has had pretty soft defense at various points this year. So a lot of this is on Miami as well. But man, Kyler kept coming.
kept coming. And yeah, I mean, not to call it our own Yahoo Fantasy social team, but yeah, you're right. The Harrison was sitting on like, you know, 30 yards or something. They tweeted out, we could put it up on YouTube. They tweeted out, you know, what is this guy like? What does he do with Marvin Harrison's picture? And then he scores the touchdown. I swear 2 minutes after they posted that. So it was looking like it was going to be another one of those games, which is a credit to Arizona and a credit to Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison too, because that has been the narrative on Arizona, is that once you get them off the first 15 plays, the scripted plays, this offense kind of goes quiet. They really pushed back here. And look, this is, Nate and I have talked about this. This is a pretty old school staff, very traditional offense. And I think they're a little bit rigid, especially in the pass game. In the run game, super creative. And of course, James Conner, another 20 carries and a touchdown in this game. He just is going to be the most underrated fantasy back, I guess, until we're all dead. That's just the way that's going to go. But yeah, again, this is a little rigid in the passing game. A little conservative is this staff overall. Sometimes it takes time. Sometimes it takes time for a younger staff to kind of figure out a new player. Probably shouldn't take this long to be like, hey, what did Marvin Harrison do best in college? It wasn't, you know, be like a go route, catch point, dunk on you dominator. Yeah. It was being a route runner, especially over the middle of the field. Go back and see a lot of those connections between him and Kyle McCord last year. It's a lot of passes over the middle of the field. So hopefully this is the beginning of a new trend and not just a fluke here for Harrison and this target tree. But we shall see. Michael Wilson gets into the end zone again. Trey McBride dominates in this one. Let's flip it over to the other side with the Miami Dolphins here, Andy Behrens, where we did get the Dolphins lose again, but they did get their quarterback back in this one.
Yeah, this would be, you know, this would be all kinds of sad if you're a Dolphins fan, right? Like, this is a game you should not have lost. They've had a few of those this year where it doesn't feel like they should have lost it, and yet there they are. So bummer if you're a Dolphins fan, but mostly a get right game for fantasy. This was the normal expected version of the Dolphins offense. They put up points. Mostert finds the end zone. Devon Achane with a functional quarterback, a totally different player. Everything changes for him. He was fantastic. It was kind of a met expectations game from Tyreek Hill, but it was good to see him, you know, involved. 70 plus receiving yards. That was good. Jaylen Waddle had a tolerable day. Had one of those balls that I don't think we'll call it a drop, but you know, I bet he thinks he should have caught it. So he left a few yards out there, but you know, overall, this was everything that we would have wanted to see fantasy wise from the Dolphins. Of course, they just don't get it done in the end.
Yeah, at least according to the model on, you know, the win probability model on our site, 63.7% with a minute and 54 seconds left win probability for the Miami Dolphins. So not what you want to see. Not what you want to see if you're a Dolphins fan. And I do think their season, like I didn't think the Tua coming back would fix all their problems, but certainly makes the offense functional. Okay, so there will probably be better days ahead for the Miami offense for all these fantasy players. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at with the Miami Dolphins at this point.
Yeah, Tua's return does not mean that your defense can get stops. It doesn't. There's an awful lot that it doesn't fix, but it does. It does give you a chance to get to, you know, 24, 27 in any given week.
All right, let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll get to the games that we sort of care about here in Week 8. All right, we're back. NFC South showdown. Falcons 31, Buccaneers 26. Andy, we'll take care of business game by the Atlanta Falcons on this one.
Yeah, man. Kirk Cousins, four touchdowns, no picks. Great game from him. Great game from Bijan. Bijan as a receiver, man, just looked awesome. The touchdown where he just put the brakes on, let the guy fly by him. Stepped into the end zone. That was stylish.
I like really that Ian that. Harditz called it a sassy touchdown, I believe, on Twitter.
It which was a sassy touchdown. Oh, yeah. Super sassy touchdown. Great day from Kyle Pitts. That was almost a shameful and embarrassing day. He was like, maybe he got stripped at the goal line, but you couldn't exactly prove it. like that was a, you know, the slowdown at the goal line where he gets the ball knocked away, that they declined to erase it from the stat sheet. So good for him. He clearly understood his mistake after the game, took full accountability for it and whatnot. But you know, they put up a big number. The Bucks didn't stop anything. I will say, if I can just skip ahead to the Bucks.
Go for it.
I was really impressed by Baker Mayfield in this game, who basically delivered the stat line that he's been delivering all season and did it without Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, which was shocking to me. They kind of built the passing game out of Kate Otten and spare parts, and it worked for the most part. So really impressive. I don't know if it's going to work every week. But that was a really impressive performance by Baker, who it turns out is more than just, you know, the lucky beneficiary of a couple of all pro receivers.
I'm maybe feeling a little less great about Baker from like a play standpoint. Definitely results wise, yeah, you get, you know, 300 plus yards, you get three touchdowns in mostly a negative game script. I just think he made some mistakes that were pretty killer for the Buccaneers. But he is working with maybe at least one and a half hands tied behind his back at this point. So I will give him credit there.
But like, there are two or three plays a game at like every week this season where you're like, Baker, man, just eat it, or just, you know, yeah, just dirt it or throw it out of bounds or what. I mean, like, that's part of the Baker experience as well.
Oh, totally. But I think those plays just ring a lot louder when you have a thin margin for error because you don't have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. So I think, yeah, you're right. Baker was kind of the same, which also kind of just points to what he was doing before versus like the results and the whole fantasy points of him and all that. I will just say, like, I get a lot of wrong, got a lot of wrong this week, have gotten a lot wrong all year. We'll continue to get things wrong. I feel really good about the analysis on the podcast of like, while the rest of the fantasy industry is like Trey Palmer, Jalen McMillan. We did say on here that the real winner was definitely going to be Kate Otten. 10 targets in this one, two touchdowns, as you mentioned. The only people who caught more than four passes in this one was Kate Otten, it was Bucky Irving, and it was Rashad White. And I kind of feel like that's the way this is going to continue to go, Andy Behrens, because McMillan he's not it. Trey Palmer's whatever. And like I said on the show, Sterling Shepard is probably their best and most reliable receiver. And he's an injury risk who missed time in this game with a hamstring injury. And he's like, I love Sterling Shepard. Sterling Shepard's my guy, but he's like a short area slot only possession receiver at this point. So that says more about that. That statement was more about the rest of the room than it is Sterling Shepard in the year 2024. So I think Kate Otten, though, like, you know, this is the profile of a clear cut tight end one rest of the way. He runs a route on 88% of the dropbacks, according to True Media, 10 targets, three in the red zone, two in the end zone, lined up all over the field, a little out wide, a little in the slot, but mostly in line. He was kind of that layup target for Baker Mayfield, kind of picking up the slack of that Chris Godwin left behind. So, yeah, real big winner out of this one is Kate Otten, who I do think is a rest of season tight end one.
Yeah, he was great. You look at this box score, and they, you know, the Baker connects with nine different receivers. And with the exception of Otten, everybody was like three catches. And there were a handful of instances this week where people reached out on social and were like, hey, would you, you know, and they would just only give me a choice of Bucks receivers. Or am I starting McMillan, Shepard, or Palmer this week? And I'm like, man, unless you know,
be starting any of them.
Are you playing like an NFC South only league here where I'm limited to this division? Because there's a whole league out there that you can choose from. You don't have to pick one of these guys. And again, Otten was the right answer for sure. Also, like, man, if this was like an injured version of Bucky Irving, every week, one or two plays where I cannot believe, and this wasn't even like his best stat line or anything like that, but my God, he had a couple plays where I just don't understand how he gained the yards.
Yeah, and last thing on this game, Drake London 4 for 34. I better not be getting one panic meter tweet about Drake London coming out of this game, because like I said last week, even producer Colin, I'm calling you out in this one, blowing up the chat like Drake London, most consistent. No, I'm like, every receiver has games where they catch 4 for 34.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, not even clicking on what Colin's saying in the chat right now. I'll get to that later. Every receiver has little down games like this. Not a big deal. He'll be just fine going forward. Let's go to a team that might not be so fine going forward. Texans 23, Colts 20. We'll get to the Texans in a second here, Andy. Colts in this one. I just had to share this stat from Austin Gale of The Ringer. Anthony Richardson ranks 222nd in completion rate, 50%, among 225 quarterbacks with 250-plus dropbacks since the year 2000. Pretty bad company. To make that point, let me read some of the names on this list. 216. Andrew Walter. Yeah, buckle up, buddy. 216, Andrew Walter. 217, Jamarcus Russell. 218, Troy Smith. Remember Troy Smith? 219, Curtis Painter. 220, Ryan Lindley. 221, Ryan Leaf. 222nd, Anthony Richardson. 223, wait for it, Tim Tebow, who, by the way, in this screenshot from True Media is listed as a tight end on the Jets, which is just funny. 224th, Mike McCann. I don't even know who that is. 225th, Akili Smith. Pretty rough company. Pretty rough company that Anthony Richardson is in at this point. I realized that there were drops in this one, for sure. A couple of big play drops from Tyler Goodson, Adonai Mitchell, you know, a couple of like plays that you know, totally weren't on, that weren't on him necessarily. I'm not saying this is all his fault, this completion percentage thing, but I'm a little nervous about where we're at with Anthony Richardson at this point.
Yeah, the thing is, there's like every team has drops. Like there's always going to be drops. I started the show talking about it, like all the drops the Washington Commanders had. They won their freaking game. Like their quarterback is a superhero and they won the game. Every team is going to have drops. They just seem so critical when it's the Colts because, man, when a ball actually arrives on time and where it's supposed to be, those feel like such precious opportunities in this offense because, I mean, Richardson, I think right now after a 10 for 32 performance is at about 44%, you know, completion percentage for the season. And that just, it makes it so hard to invest in like Josh Downs today, superhero game, right? He had the busted coverage touchdown, but then he had that other just absolutely sensational catch that only, I don't know how many guys in the league can make that catch. It was absolutely sick. And it wasn't quite a touchdown. You know, he's on like, I don't know, 1-inch line, 2-inch line, something like that.
1/16th line.
Outrageous catch by him. And he's just a phenomenally talented player. I'm a huge fan of Josh Downs, but he's like, he's too good to leave on the waiver wire, but the passing offense is just too poor to start any of these guys. Like I'm in a pretty deep league in one of the places where I have Michael Pittman. I'm still not starting him. And I don't know. I left Josh Downs on a bench today. I don't even feel bad about it. Like, this is just a terrible passing environment right now. And they're coming so close too, right? Like this game was so winnable. And your quarterback went 10 for 32. And he does show enough that like you want to keep playing him and you got to get him reps because he's so inexperienced. And you know, there's always two or three throws a game where you're like, wow, that's awesome. That guy's got a great arm, or it all came together there. And obviously as a rusher, he's fantastic, but man, it's the NFL in 2024, and it's been a really long time in this league since you could get away with completing less than 50% of your passes.
Yeah, to put a point on what you said about how these opportunities feel so precious, even you mentioned Josh Downs, the 69-yard touchdown. I tweeted about it, and somebody's like, well, to be fair, it was a busted coverage. And I was like, yeah, but don't tell me that your heart didn't stop a little bit when you see Josh Downs just wide open. You're like, oh man, is this one going to hit him actually? Or, you know, yeah. I mean, like that's where we're at with the Richardson experience. And to me, I think the thing that's, you know, I've said it a lot. The guy needs reps. You're not going to bench him for Joe Flacco. There's just no point in that. You've got to see if this is your guy. He needs the reps. That's the one thing he definitely needs. I do just wonder if we get to a point where he's going to start to lose confidence, or it's going to be problematic with some of these receivers and things like that. So I don't know. I'm definitely concerned with where Richardson is. Like from a fantasy perspective, I don't even really think this is a question anymore. You're not starting you feel bad about benching Josh Downs. I started Josh Downs in a league, and I feel bad for the person I played that they got that put on them because it shouldn't have happened. You know, like
that's fair.
That's where we're at with the receivers. Richardson, I don't think is a QB1, you know, anymore. Jonathan Taylor's back though. 20 carries, 100 yards, and a touchdown. So that's pretty great. On the other side with the Texans, you know, Stephon Diggs gets hurt in this one. Looks like a pretty serious injury, non-contact.
Yeah.
He was having a nice game, 5 for 81 and a touchdown. You know, Tank Dell had another kind of like no big plays, but he did catch a touchdown, which was, a, by the way, just beautiful, like picture perfect execution on a tight coverage goal.
Crazy good throw. Crazy good throw.
Great throw and great catch by Tank Dell too. Like perfect toe tap. You see a lot of receivers like goofing around the like the back of the end zone or whatever. Tank Dell just handled that like a professional. But with Diggs hurt, Dell clearly, like I said, still not the same version of himself. Nico's coming back soon, but just like, man, I'm starting to get to the point where I feel like the idea of what this Texans wide receiver core with second year CJ Stroud is like is going to remain just an idea.
Yeah, they're probably another team that's suddenly, are they competing with Tampa and Washington and Pittsburgh and whoever else is in the market for, you know, there's a couple of receivers that are probably going to be on the block, but maybe not as many guys as we thought a couple weeks ago. So we're but they now probably need one. The Diggs injury really hangs over this team, and they got to get Collins back as quickly as possible, because the rest of the receiving core may be outside of Tank Dell, who has shown some stuff over the last 3 weeks, but it still hasn't been like last year's version of Tank Dell.
There's a zero catch game in there too, by the way.
Yeah, there is a zero catch game in the middle of those two. Yeah, so there's probably a need for a receiver here as well, and there's only one Deontay Johnson to go around. So I don't know where he's going to land, but they have to be players for a receiver right at this moment. We should also say that this is another phenomenal game for Joe Mixon, who is like maybe quietly the hero of this team's offense. The touchdown he scored, he threw a man to the ground like a toddler off of his shoulders. I mean, he was just great. He was stylistically really fun to watch and just incredibly productive in the box score too.
Next game up here, Packers 30, Jaguars 27. Obviously the big story coming out of here is another injury for Jordan Love. It's a groin injury. Matt LaFleur said after the game, high level of concern for Jordan Love's injury. He's going to get an MRI on Monday morning, so by the time you're listening to this, maybe you know more about this Jordan Love situation, but that is obviously the big thing we're watching coming out of this game.
Yeah, real roller coaster game for Trevor Lawrence. I thought he made some terrible throws early. I thought he was great on the go-ahead drive, right, or the game-tying drive. So late in this game, really good Trevor Lawrence, not good throughout. Another, you know, Malik Willis was pretty good, was certainly ready to come into the game. That was positive. Josh Jacobs was great in this one. You know, another game in which the Packers receiving core is just a spin of the wheel, is just a total dice roll. Tucker Kraft gets home. That was fun. But by and large, you know, we had a kind of a gimpy Brian Thomas in this game. That's maybe something to be concerned about going forward too.
Yeah, Christian Kirk also banged up in this game too, when he's another one of these, maybe he's on the trade block, but you know, this might be bad timing with that injury, so we shall see about that. But yeah, Packers-wise, obviously, to quote our buddy Scott Pienowski, this receiver depth, you know, target tree looks like a phone book. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 dudes with targets in this one. So like, oh yeah, you're worried that the top four guys aren't all going to eat. Well, yeah, when you're throwing a 10 guys, good freaking luck. I mean, even in the rushing game, we've got 6 guys with carries here because Malik Willis got on the field. So what an interesting offense there for the Green Bay Packers. I don't have too much else on this game other than, you know, if you started Tank Bigsby coming off of his game in London, 18 carries in this one, you feel pretty good, even though this looked like a dangerous game script for a back like Bigsby. Next game up here, Eagles 37, Bengals 17. Andy, what do you got on this one?
Yeah, this is, I mean, if the Eagles are going to be a serious contender this year, this is what you expect that team to look like against a vulnerable defense, right? Jalen Hurts, great fantasy wise. Both marquee receivers really made their presence felt. Crazy, like a wonderful touchdown catch from Devontae Smith on that deep ball. AJ Brown has a game. Barkley's really good. Like, you know, everybody got their numbers. Jalen Hurts, just an absolute cheat code on the goal line. So tremendous day from him. Really impressive day overall from Philly's offense. I thought it was going to be better for Cincinnati. I thought they started out really well. had that early touchdown on a nifty play design to Ja'Marr Chase, where they were just kind of able to play ISO ball between Burrow and Chase. That was really fun. And then Philly more or less shut it down. So a pretty impressive performance by I think the Philadelphia defense overall. Burrow with a relatively quiet fantasy day. Didn't think it was going to be that way. I thought we might get like a 35-28 kind of game here, and Cincinnati didn't hold up their end of the bargain.
Yeah, I know we don't have T. Higgins in this game because, of course, late week, injury situation pops up for T. Higgins. He ends up missing this game. But Bengals over the last 3 weeks, you come out of that week 5 game against the Ravens, the overtime win, and you're like, well, you know what? This defense might stink, but at least the offense rules. At least the offense can put up points. Mm-hmm. The last 3 weeks against the Giants, 17 points and a win. Against the Browns, 21 points and a win. Okay, you outscore the Browns and the Daniel Jones Giants. Color me not impressed. And then this week, 17 points against the Eagles in a pretty brutal loss. Are you concerned about this Bengals offense at all?
Yeah, a little bit I am, sure. I'm not overly impressed by the ground game. T. Higgins is such a difference maker for this team. So a little bit concerned, sure. Ja'Marr Chase is still a really impressive player. I don't mean this was a disappointing game for Chase from where it started. And he just not a lot of yards after catch. But overall, of course, I'm definitely concerned about this offense. It's not the run game that I would have hoped for.
Yeah, long run of 5 for Chase Brown on his 12 carries. Long run of 4 for Zach Moss on his 5 carries. So not what you want there from a running game perspective.
Not optimal.
No. And yeah, on the Eagles side of things, your quarterback's going to throw 20 times. It's nice when, 13 of them go to Devontae Smith or A.J. Brown. So that's what you like to see over there. Yeah. Last game here in the sort of care about section, Bills 31, Seahawks 10. This is a pretty surprising result here, Andy Burns, or at least sort of. I'll open this game up this way with, I was concerned about what this Seahawks offense would look like without DK Metcalf coming into it. This game did not make me feel any better. If you had told me before the game that JSN was going to lead this team in targets and let me guess his receiving stat line, I probably could have guessed 6 for 69 would have been the result of that one.
Yeah, we talk occasionally about the rare receivers in this league who just really tilt the field in their direction and change the shape of things and change the math of things for everybody else. And DK Metcalf is pretty clearly one of those guys. And this is just a pretty uninteresting, dimensionless offense without him on the field. JSN, I mean, this is the game that you would have penciled in for him. You're so right about that. Nobody else really a difference maker in that receiving core. Very quiet day from Tyler Lockett. They get nothing going on the ground. We got Seahawks yelling at other Seahawks. We had a situation in which I can't think of all the players that were involved, but we had two Seahawks yelling at each other and two Bills who separated them, right? Who broke up the Seahawks who were about to fight. That was
not
cool.
What you want.
not exactly what you want. Yeah. Just a tough scene overall on the Seattle side. There's nothing particularly surprising on the Buffalo side, honestly. Like that's a number that you thought they could probably put up against Seattle, but Seattle being absolutely unable to hang with them was really concerning.
Yeah, I mean, I would say maybe the Amari Cooper usage was surprising because he did get a route bump. I don't know if this data is fully up to date, but it looks like Matt Collins ran a route on 45.9% of the dropbacks, which has to be one of the lowest of the season, whereas Amari Cooper was up at around 65%, but he was only targeted on 8.3% of those routes. But hey, man, I will say Khalil Shakir, another just 9 catches on 10 targets, one of the most automatic players in the NFL. And Josh Allen is sort of in that zone of like, I'm just going to put it near Keon Coleman. I'm going to put it. I don't care if he's covered. I'm just going to put it near him. And he's got a lot of faith in Keon to get that thing. And it's deserved faith. Coleman has made a lot of plays here since Amari Cooper's joined the fold.
Yeah, basically his two best games since Amari Cooper joined the team and everybody dropped him in fantasy. He'd been a player who was solidly ineligible for the waiver wire column until the Amari Cooper trade. And then all of a sudden he's like 40% rostered and he's been great these last couple of weeks. Like he's not the guy who was going to be most affected by Amari Cooper joining this team. They like him. He's a developmental prospect who you can expect to continue to see a bunch of targets and see a bunch of usage. And they're building his role, and Allen is building trust in him. And I think he's going to remain a thing for the rest of the season. It always seemed like it was Hollins that was going to go away and not Coleman or Shakir.
All right, let's toss to our final break. We come back, we'll talk through the games that could have been an email and maybe hand out some awards at the end of the show right after this. All right, Andy, we are back with the games that could have been an email. Chiefs 27, Raiders 20, maybe slightly disrespectful because this game is so, it's a touchdown here. Of course, Antonio Pierce caught a lot of crap for, not going for two on the final Raiders touchdown. Yeah, Antonio Pierce. But nobody, I think, is more anti-analytics at this point than Antonio Pierce, especially when it comes to these in-game decision-making situations. But I think, obviously, I don't know really what we need to say about the Raiders, pal. If you got anything, go for it. But, I mean, Chiefs, 27 points here. Patrick Mahomes actually throws a touchdown pass. Throws two touchdown passes in the month of October.
Two? Yeah, Travis Kelce with 10 catches in this one, and Patrick Mahomes had not thrown a touchdown pass since September. Finally gets that done. Not that we thought that Patrick Mahomes was never going to throw one again, but it's nice to see. Kareem Hunt, man, I feel like this game has been coming for Kareem Hunt, where we get 21 carries and 59 yards. Because he's been a nice fantasy story, and he is certainly getting volume and all that. Like, I can tell you a nice story about Kareem Hunt, but he is not making a lot of people miss. And if Isaiah Pacheco can come back at something close to full strength, he is definitely taking over that backfield.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he finds his way into the end zone, but he only averages 2.8 yards per carry, which is way more than Alexander Mattison, who had 14 carries for 15 yards on the Raiders side of things. I don't know that this is necessarily like the hammer drop Kermit the Frog revenge game that we pictured from Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs offense, but for this version of the Chiefs offense, it was pretty much what you could expect to be a revenge game. Xavier Worthy has like a suspiciously similar stat line basically every week. Doesn't matter the amount of targets he gets, he finishes somewhere around 4 for 37.
But it's four catches.
He scooted into the end zone for, if you did have to start him in fantasy. On the DeAndre Hopkins front, he ran around on 34.1% of the dropbacks. He did get targeted early, which I kind of thought like, he's going to be a full-time player. But man, yeah, just 34% of the routes. That will obviously come up in future weeks. Feeling pretty good about him. And just one more usage note on him too. He was outside, according to PFF, on 90.9% of his snaps. So Andy Reid said in the press conference, like, yeah, he'll be in kind of those same spots that Juju and Rashee Rice were. Not so much in this game. But then again, they played so many two tight ends, it probably didn't really matter. Okay, next game up here that could have been an email. Chargers 26, Saints 8. Saints made a quarterback change. We saw Jake Haener in this one. I don't know if I need to say too much more about the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, this is a game that deserves the weird score that it ended with. Like 26-8 just describes this game so
perfectly. At one point it was 9-5.
Yeah, like that would have described this game perfectly too. The Saints are just such an ugly watch right now, and it's weird to be like, oh man, this team desperately needs to get Derek Carr back, but they really need to get Derek Carr back.
They really need to get Derek Carr back. Chris Olave came back and did have 14 targets, 8 catches, 107 yards. Took a brutal hit very early in the game. I was like, oh my God, is he about to be ruled out with another concussion? Was pretty concerned about that for his perspective. But he obviously finished the game and had a really nice performance. Did have one kind of brutal drop there. But the real story has got to be on the Chargers side. 6 catches, 6 targets, 111 yards, 2 touchdowns for Ladd McConkey, including a 60-yard scamper. He's looked great all season. I think last game coming out of the bye, there were some injuries that kind of kept him on and off the field. But I do think we can officially say we are in a post-bye rookie bump world for Ladd McConkey with the LA Chargers.
Fantastic game. The 60-yard touchdown is going to stand up as one of the highlight plays of the year, I thought. Like he skips away from a couple of tackles in that one. You know, great catch. A couple of really great moves there. This was Ladd McConkey made this, to the extent to which this was a watchable game. Ladd McConkey willed it to be so. It was outside of him, not so much.
Not so much. Speaking of watchable and unwatchable products, we got Patriots 25, Jets 22. I missed the Broncos. We'll just keep it rolling here. Screw it. We'll get back to the Broncos. Patriots 25, Jets 22. Drake May was looking like he was going to make the Patriots watchable in this one. He had a nice scramble for a touchdown, but he was ruled out with a concussion in this game. And still, the Jets lost to Jacoby Brissett. Let me just explain the Jets to you in a couple seconds here, dear listener. I saw at My Sports Update tweet out this morning, Aaron Rodgers enters today's game with 10 touchdown passes on the season. He is the first Jets QB to have 10 touchdown passes in a season since 2019. And I forgot to do it because, you know, we're about to be on FFL, but I wanted to quote tweet that with, oh, so everything's fine, right? Jets season's going great, right? Right? Spoiler alert, Jets season is not. They haven't won since they fired Robert Saleh. Davante Adams is on the team. It opens things up for Garrett Wilson at 100 yards. Who cares? The Jets are just like a completely unserious operation at this point.
And like a joyless team too. Just a really unfun team to watch. They make football look miserable. Rodgers unhappy all the time. It was last week that he kind of sort of blamed the media, right? We got to stop listening to you guys.
You guys.
I don't know who gets thrown under the bus for this one. But man, this is just a really unfun team to watch. And it's not, you know, it's not like they lack offensive playmakers. They have plenty of them. We just like not being able to stop the Patriots was pretty wild today. I think if you want a fantasy takeaway from this one, I think you can feel pretty good that Drake May was going to have another nice day in his most challenging, you know, opposing defense matchup yet. Like things were starting really well for him, and we finally got a rushing touchdown out of him. We kind of knew it was coming. He looked great on the score, but he looked really good as a scrambler outside of that. Really unfortunate that he suffers a concussion. Hopefully he's good to go next week, but they've got some problematic matchups coming up, and it's just good to see that he's probably going to be able to play through that and do just fine.
Yeah, Titans, Bears, the next two games, we'll see if Drake May can clear the concussion protocol to get out there for week 9. If not, we will get another Jacoby Brissett start in this one. Next game up here, Broncos 28, Panthers 14. And Sean Payton was like running trick plays. Troy Franklin's throwing to fullbacks late in this game. You know, I don't know who pissed off Sean Payton over on the Panthers. Maybe they're just maybe he's mad at them for what they did to Bryce Young. Maybe he's a big Bryce Young guy. I don't know. But at the same time, his defense definitely stuffed Bryce Young into a locker in this game. So pretty much anything what you expected to happen in this game happened.
Cortland Sutton completes a pass in this one. Riley Dixon completes a pass.
Cortland Sutton, not Troy Franklin. My bad.
We got some wild stats attached to this game. Great game from Bo Nix, stats wise. Again, I was pretty locked in on the Bears game at this time, but every time I poked my head up, Bo Nix was doing a little something. He actually averaged well over 7 yards per pass attempt in this one. So big mismatch. Not much of a game from Bryce Young, obviously. Not really the game that you might have been hoping for from Javonte Williams off of, you know, in a really friendly spot and off of a great performance a week ago. But still, you'd have to feel good about this on the Broncos side. And again, Knicks with crazy numbers in this one, plus a rushing touchdown.
Yeah, according to NextGen Stats, Bo Nix generated a 52.5% success rate, his second highest passing success rate in this season. He was great against the blitz, 147 yards and 2 touchdowns, including a plus 19.6 completion percentage over expectation against the blitz. So nobody's afraid of the Panthers defense, which was already going to be bad coming into the year and is now banged up. We'll see if Deontay Johnson and or Adam Thielen are on this team coming into next week. Neither played in this game. And, you know, I do think I don't know. It's never going to matter for fantasy, especially if Bryce Young ends up kind of starting the rest of the way. And who the F knows what's going to happen in with that situation. But I do think guys like Jalen Coker and Xavier Legette can play. Like you might as well just see what those guys can do, I guess. But it is beyond lost and hopeless. Dave Canales already looks like he's aging like a president, and he's 8 games into his Panthers head coaching stint. Final game in week 8 to discuss. And like, I mean, what a stat line here. Lions 52, Titans 14. And I mean, the beautiful part of this game, if you want to call it beautiful, the Lions score 52 points and Jared Goff, he has 85 passing yards. So that's how the day went for the Tennessee Titans.
Brutal special teams day for the Titans. And you know that if they're mentioning your special teams performance on a fantasy show, then it was
not
either spectacularly good or really, really bad. And it was just really, really bad. This is a total non-competitive game. Nothing about it. Everybody got home. For a while, I was freaking out about Sam LaPorta not scoring. Had a touchdown negated by replay review. Had another every time Brock Wright catches a pass for a second, I think it's Sam LaPorta, and then it's not, and I just like go into a tailspin all over again. But Sam LaPorta finally caught one from David Montgomery. That was really fun. The running backs were great. Everybody basically got home. An unfortunately low yardage total from Jared Goff, but man, all the yards were in special teams. Just not even a little bit competitive.
Yeah, not even a little bit competitive is the right way to say this. Calvin Ridley, you know, after being put in the cope, or he's been in the coping corner for a minute, he had 10 catches for 143 yards. Obviously, DeAndre Hopkins not on this team anymore. Maybe that's the sign of things to come. Maybe, but would anybody on planet Earth be surprised if Calvin Ridley catches like 2 passes on 10 targets against the Patriots next week?
No.
So, yeah, we'll see about that performance. All right, let's wrap it up with awards. Andy, do you have any fantasy awards to give out?
I got one in case people missed it. I feel like I always try to highlight some obscure special teams moment that occurred at some point. Jacksonville's punter, is it Logan Cook? I think his name is Logan Cook. I could be making that up. That could be a made up dude. I don't know. But I think Jacksonville's punter's name is Logan Cook. He had a 73 yard punt that went out at like the 1 foot line. You will literally never see a better punt in all your years watching the NFL. Didn't matter. They didn't win. But it's as good a punt as you're ever going to see.
Yeah. Logan Cook with an E is the Jacksonville Jaguars punter.
There it is.
There it is. So I don't know. Maybe we just need to have Andy's special teamer of the week. Maybe that can be a fantasy award. I've got an award to give out. I've got a WTF of the week here. And this is in relation to National Tight Ends Day, which we have not referenced on the podcast yet because I told Andy I had something to say about National Tight Ends Day at the end of it. Look, folks, I think that most I think that 99.3% of the people who say the NFL is rigged, the NFL is fake, the NFL is rigged, are like the dumbest people on earth. Okay. I think for the most part, the people who go on the internet, mostly because their bets lose and they can't handle a loss, they don't know how to lose with dignity, they don't know how to act like adults. Like I said, 99.3% of those people are the dumbest people on earth. That being said, there were multiple times this afternoon as every broadcaster on earth reminded us that it was National Tight Ends Day. There were multiple times when like Kyle Pitts is scoring the first touchdown of the day, where Dalton Kincaid finds the end zone. Tucker Kraft, your boy Sam LaPorta has a touchdown. It's called back. He gets another touchdown. Adam Troutman scores a touchdown today. Zach Ertz has 7 for 77. Mark Andrews, coping corner resident Mark Andrews, probably be taking him out, whatever. He finds the end zone in this one. Cade Otton is like one of the best fantasy players that you could have started in your freaking flex position. No, he actually is the highest scoring flex position player with Ladd McConkey today, okay? Travis Kelce, remember him? Yeah, he's dynamic. did I mention Trey McBride? David Njoku, I mean, tight end after tight end after tight end.
Yeah.
What's his name? Lucas Kroll, like, tries to convert a special teams, like a fake field goal or something. There was definitely at one part of the day where I wanted to be some of the 0.7% that, like, you know what? No, actually, the NFL is rigged. Because how in the world do we have this fake ass holiday, which is National Tight Ends Day. And like, oh, and all the tight ends are just going off. Even Kyle Pitts, where he I will go to, and look, I got Kyle Pitts on a dynasty team that I've started for the last however many years, was it 4 years he's been in the league? Every single week, except when I hate myself enough to start Taysom Hill, who, if Taysom Hill had done something, like, honestly, maybe if he, maybe the fact that he didn't do anything is actually credit to National Tight Ends Day. That is big National Tight Ends Day pushing back.
That's where they draw the line.
That is where they draw the line, because he's not even really a tight end. They're actually pushing back on the fantasy industry for making him a tight end. So we figured that out. Okay. But I mean, again, I benefited from the Kyle Pitts second touchdown. I will go to my grave saying that was not a touchdown, and they gave it to him because it's National Tight Ends Day. So for all of you NFL rigged idiots that are out there, I'm not with you, but like, I was at least like side eyeing your way today on National Tight Ends Day. By the way, this is not even an anti tight end thing. I'm pro tight end. Okay. You know,
you're notoriously pro tight end, pro tight end to a fault.
Yeah. Well, no, not charting tight ends. Okay. Never going to do that, but I'm standing up for like, okay. How about instead of a fake ass, like little holiday, we pay tight ends more money. How about average per year? Most average per year for a tight end is Travis Kelce at $17 million. In terms of wide receivers, you know, he makes $17 million, $17.5 million. Friggin' Jerry Jeudy, okay, makes as much per year as Travis Kelce. I mean, go down the list. George Kittle, the great George Kittle, but one of the best two-way tight ends maybe ever, $15 million. He barely out-earns Cortland Sutton and Darnell Mooney. Like, what are we doing here? How about instead of fake little acknowledgement holidays, we make real systemic change for tight ends and we pay them more money? That's all I gotta say.
I like that you just layered a conspiracy on top of a conspiracy. So number one, the NFL is going out of its way to feed the tight ends on National Tight Ends Day. But number two, we actually created this holiday so we didn't have to pay them. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a false flag. National Tight Ends Day, it's not just an annoying thing that broadcasters bring up. It is a false flag for the real issues facing the tight end position.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even Evan Engram caught a pass today, caught a touchdown today. Yeah.
Harmon Barron's 2024 standing up for tight ends everywhere.
No, you definitely don't want that. No one wants that.
All right. On that note, let's get the hell out of here. That has been about enough. Don't expect to get any panic tweets about tight ends. I'm sure somebody will send it in. But if you do have a panic tweet, what am I talking about? You got a player you're panicking about, send it into the panic meter, fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. We're taking all your submissions. You guys have been crushing it the last 2 weeks. Don't lose momentum now, okay? I really feel like I could be giving a stump speech at this point. Don't lose momentum now. Send in the panic. Send them in fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. That's going to do it for today's show. Thank you to Andy Behrens for joining me in a compromised mental, perhaps physical state over there in his dark little office. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate you, buddy. You are the best. I'm releasing you now from work duties to go cope with this. However, you will put yourself in the coping corner and enjoy the rest of your evening.
I am. I'm going to curl up in the coping corner, sob a little. Cry until I can't cry anymore. And I don't know. You'll probably see me on Wednesday or Thursday.
Perhaps. We'll see. In the meantime, we'll be back on Tuesday. Dalton Del Don joins me for the post week 8 panic meter. Like I mentioned, please send in your panic to the fantasy mailbag, fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Until then, we are out. Justice for tight ends everywhere.